When we hear the story of young Henry saving for Super Robot Dude, isn't it sweet? How cute. We think children need to learn to save money. I was 23 years old when I first bought something I couldn't pay for, Christmas presents. It was only a few hundred dollars, and I figured somehow that I'd just pay the credit card off next month. I was living paycheck to paycheck at the time, so I don't know where I thought the extra money would come from. Instead, of course, it took me months to pay off those few hundred dollars. It was a good lesson. I never ran up credit card debt again. But like most of us, many of us, I have bought thousands of dollars worth of things that I count on being able to pay off eventually. Cars, houses, student loans. I have two mortgage payments, and everything works just fine as long as my renters pay their rent, and I have an income, and my husband has an income. My financial situation feels comfortable, even prosperous. I have renters. But if my renters leave, or anything happens to their ability to pay, or my income goes away or changes, or my husband's does, if any one of those things happen, what feels comfortable will suddenly become very precarious. How cute. Children need to learn to save money. My husband and I could not afford the down payment of the first house we bought, the one we now rent out. So we had what's called private mortgage insurance, which is essentially a second mortgage payment for the down payment we didn't have. And the fact that it all worked out okay was the luck of our timing. What we call financial management in our culture is a lot like gambling. And nothing I'm describing is at all unusual. I expect that most of you will know these terms and recognize these situations, especially here in San Diego, where our homes are among the least affordable in the United States, depending on which list you look at. We're sometimes number one for least affordable. I always thought it was San Francisco, but sometimes it's us. Think of all the things that we are accustomed to that make it easy to spend money we don't have. Credit cards with high limits, 30-year mortgages. We're starting to hear about 40-year mortgages, by the way. Car loans, payday loans, where you receive a loan until your next payday, cash advances on your credit cards. What used to be unusual is now commonplace. So it's easy to spend money we don't have, and the result, of course, is that we have to spend more because it's the interest and fees that makes all this lending possible. If I overspent $200 at Christmas and could only pay $50 a month, I'd have spent $250 before I paid off my credit card. And if I have to keep using my credit card while I'm trying to pay it off, everything I purchase starts to accrue interest right away. Moving debt around on credit cards is its whole own game. And if you've stopped listening to me, because credit card spending isn't something you struggle with and you think, oh, this isn't about me, just recall that there are a dozen other ways you are not as careful with your money as you could be. Are you earning the best interest rates? Do you have the right amount of life insurance to protect your loved ones? Do you have long-term care insurance? Do you know what the interest rates are on your home loan? And if it might be time to refinance, do you know how to figure that out? Are you saving 10% of your income? Are you giving 10% away? Have you designated not just your primary beneficiaries, but your secondary beneficiaries on your accounts? It has been said that money is a problem if you don't have it, and it's also a problem if you do. And it's tempting to think that money problems are solved with money. There's a saying that goes around Facebook pretty regularly. Sometimes I just want someone to hug me and say, I know it's hard. You're going to be okay. Here is some chocolate and $6 million. A couple of decades ago, we thought $1 million was a lot of money. Now it's, we need like $6 million. According to a 2010 study, the more money you win in the lottery, the more likely you are to end up bankrupt. So the more money you're given, the more likely you are to lose it. Similar research estimates that 70% of people who have unexpectedly come into large sums of money end up broke within 7 years. It's tempting to think that money problems are solved with money. And certainly some money problems are solved with money. People need employment and need to be paid fair wages. These are justice issues. Healthcare and health insurance need to be affordable and available. Retirement needs to be financially possible. Receiving an education should not result in lifelong loans, student loans. We need enough money to live without struggling and feeling burdened. And by the way, a study from Princeton University suggests that enough money is $80,000 a year per household. That's sort of calculatable. Then that if you have more than that, it doesn't necessarily result in more happiness. So once we have enough money to feel content, studies find that more money does not make us happier. And we know it doesn't solve our problems, repair our relationships, increase our self-esteem, doesn't give life meaning, doesn't make everything all better, doesn't actually buy love. My mom grew up very poor, and she would often say to us that money buys convenience, not happiness. Being in right relationship with our money, what I call right relationship, is important work for us as spiritual people. I observe that our culture falls into two kinds of traps when it comes to money. We either give money too much power or not enough. We give money too much power when we live in fear of not having enough. When we let ourselves imagine that others judge us by what we own or how much we spend. Like the father in our reading today who rushed back into the fire for the cash register. Money is important, but it's not everything. And we give money not enough power when we think it doesn't matter if we spend too much, when we splurge, when we should be saving. When we spend too much at Christmas and figure it will somehow all work out. To be in right relationship with our money is to find the right balance of being respectful of and responsible with money without making money the center of our lives. Today, as you've heard, is the fifth in a 10-part sermon series on voluntary simplicity. And we've been talking in this series about five values of voluntary simplicity that help define, help us make voluntary simplicity decisions. And these values are all involved when we're responsible with our finances. We demonstrate intention and choice. We reduce wastefulness and consumption. We reduce our environmental footprint in favor of sustainability. We cultivate non-materialistic sources of pleasure and satisfaction, and we value community, relationship, and interdependence. Your challenge for January, we're having monthly challenges, is to take steps to improve your financial well-being. What steps you take are up to you and will suit your situation and needs. Some possibilities to think about are creating a budget if you need to reduce your spending, to buy life insurance to be responsible to your loved ones, to buy long-term care insurance, to move your assets into a trust, to consult with a financial planner, to update your will, anything you might do to improve your peace of mind about your finances. Many of us will have something that pops into our head right away, like that thing you've been meaning to do, but it's kind of onerous, so you haven't gotten to it. I'm meeting with a financial planner next week, so my work will be to follow up on the recommendations and decisions that come from that meeting. Part of the challenge of managing our finances is that we don't give this area of our lives our full attention every day. We look at things, most of us, closely, maybe once or twice a year. We make some decisions, make some changes, and then we turn our attention away again. And of course we do. We don't wake up every morning and decide to change banks because of interest rates. Like, we just can't live that way. But so let this be your reminder and your invitation that now is a good time to pay attention, to make some decisions and make some changes in the coming year. Now, I would be remiss in my service of voluntary simplicity if I did not encourage you to give frugality a try. Frugality, penny-pinching, tight-watery. It's never really in vogue, never trendy, but my experience is that it can be fun to count and calculate how to save a buck or two. And there's a great tradition of frugality in the voluntary simplicity movement, and actually in the United States. It sort of competes with our consumption. But if you've ever felt self-conscious about not having enough money, you might try embracing frugality as a way to get over that self-consciousness. Just go all in. Wash out and reuse your plastic bags. Calculate the costs of different kinds of sandwiches you might make yourself for lunch in order to find the cheapest option. So you take a loaf of bread, the price of the bread, count the slices, figure out the cost of a slice, do all this math. Shop at the Army surplus store, just all in. You know that it's not always easy to figure out what's simple. There's not always one right answer. The cheapest bread might not be the healthiest bread, for example. You have to make a decision. I'll share with you my current conundrum. I drink iced tea every day, even when it is very cold outside. And I had been drinking bottled tea Java that I get from Costco in a box of 12. So I decided it must be simpler to brew my own iced tea, and I've been doing that, but I've just calculated that the tea I like to brew and drink costs me almost three times as much as buying the bottled tea Java from Costco. So now I have to decide what I think is simpler or better or more in service to my values. Brewing my own tea, even though it's more expensive. Buying the tea Java, which turns out to be reasonably affordable, but there's wastefulness with the glass bottles and the cardboard box, and those things can be recycled. Or do I, and here's my real soul searching, do I commit myself to finding a tea I can brew myself that's cheaper than Tea Java, which may bring me to bagged tea, you guys? I can't resist trying to figure it out. If these kinds of money puzzles interest you too, perhaps frugality is what you want to explore in January. Let's all be tight wads together. Just an idea. True wealth, you know, isn't related to money at all. Wealth is about abundance, about pleasure, about wisdom and joy. The Greek philosopher Epictetus wrote, "Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants." The pleasure of eating a crisp apple, the feel of sand underneath your feet as you walk along the beach, a chatty phone call with a good friend, a cup of good coffee on the patio after church. This is the wealth that's available to all of us, no matter our financial situation. Whatever steps you take this month to improve your financial well-being, May you do so in celebration that true wealth is already yours.